Well, if you have your Bible this morning, will you open to the book of Lamentations with me? We're going to be in Lamentations chapter 3, and really just for a few moments, okay? But if you're having a hard time finding that book, it's not one that maybe you've ever visited, perhaps, but it's if you find Psalms and then keep going, you'll find like Isaiah, then you'll find Jeremiah. These are the major prophets. Jeremiah, right after Jeremiah, is this little book called Lamentations, and so we're going to be in chapter 3 there. Hey, listen, while we're kind of beginning, you're going to notice that some guys are passing out some sheets of paper that have some data on there, and so they're going to give one of those to every adult. Teenager, if you'd like one, please take one of those. There should be plenty for everybody. I would ask you one question, so everybody look at me for just a second. Don't look at the paper until I ask you to look at the paper, okay? This is a question of discipline. Can you do it? Don't look at the paper until I ask you to look at the paper. So leave it face down, put it under your Bible, whatever you got to do. I promise we'll look at it in length, okay? But I got some things that I want to look at and talk about before we get to it. So take one of those from the guys, and I want you to bury it. Bury it for just a few minutes. I promise you we'll get to it, and you'll get all the data you can handle, okay? And you can grab me afterwards, and we can talk about the data together. I love data, all right? I'm a numbers guy. I'll be glad to just data you to death if you'd like to. But for now, will you just wait, okay? Just wait. While they pass those out, let me give you the big idea this morning. Here's the big idea. To wait for the Lord is to actively serve Him with dependence and trust. To wait for the Lord, which is what we're talking about this morning, waiting on the Lord, waiting for the Lord, is to actively, emphasize the word actively there, serve Him with dependence and trust. What I want you to see is that waiting is not passive, waiting is active. You know, we learn, and I've already said that word several times this morning, wait, waiting. We learn early in life to dislike that word, wait or waiting. We learn early in life to dislike that. With my kids, you know, we've got 4 children, and they're 9, 7, 5, and 3, so we're right in the sweet spot of all those fun memories that we're making, right? One of the things that I have to say often to my children is, hey, just wait. Wait. In fact, I just told you guys to wait. How about that? Ironic. But I tell them all the time, hey, wait. When can we have a cookie for dessert? Just wait. Are we there yet? Just wait. Oftentimes we say that word, wait, and they are learning very early to dislike waiting, just like you and me. For a child and for us sometimes, here's what waiting means. Listen to this, okay? Listen. Because waiting, the reason we dislike it is because waiting means this right here. Sit there and be patient. Sit on your hands. Don't do anything, and be patient. That's why we don't like the word wait, because it's essentially, at least to my children, it's torture. We don't like waiting, because it means just sit there. Now, here's why I say that. Please listen. Because that is not what the Bible means when it says wait. Biblical waiting, and we see this thing waiting on the Lord over 40 times in Scripture. When we see the word wait or waiting on the Lord in Scripture, it doesn't mean to just sit there. And here's what I want you to hear me say. Waiting biblically is not passive, it is active. Waiting biblically is not passive, it's not sitting there, it is active, it's doing something. It is stewardship. It's something that you're supposed to be doing while stewarding the wait, stewarding the patience. I want to look at a passage very briefly this morning in Lamentations 3. 19 through 26. And again, this is just a snapshot so quickly, and I don't want to spend so much more time here, but I want to show you a passage that talks about biblical waiting. In fact, I'm going to show you a few quickly. But look at verse 19, chapter 3. It says this, Jeremiah writing at a hard time. Remember my affliction and my wanderings, the wormwood and the gall. My soul continually remembers it and is bowed down within me. Hurts, right? But this I call to mind, and therefore I have hope. The steadfast love of the Lord never ceases. His mercies never come to an end. They are new every morning. New morning mercies, right? Great is your faithfulness. The Lord is my portion, says my soul. Therefore I will hope in Him. And here it is. The Lord is good to those who wait for Him, to the soul who seeks Him. It is good that one should wait quietly for the salvation of the Lord. I'm going to talk real quickly about the immediate context. And again, I'm going to move really fast here. But again, the author being Jeremiah. This book consists of five poems or chapters as they're broken down, each lamenting the devastation of Judah. God's people have been devastated. And so the tone of this book, and if you've never read it, I encourage you to do so. It's raw. It's emotional. The reason why it's called Lamentations is because it is itself a lament. Jeremiah is expressing grief over the consequences of his people's sin and the suffering that followed God's discipline. And so listen, this is important, and we're going to get to a broad principle in a second. But in context, what's happening in the book is that God's wrath for sin is real, and yet so is his mercy. His mercy remains. His mercy, as he says, are new every morning. And so that is the principle in context. It's specifically talking about God's discipline and God's wrath, and yet his mercy remains, and there's a waiting there. But here's the broader principle that I'd like to apply this morning as it pertains to what we're talking about this morning, and that is this: a people having to patiently wait during the seeming silence of God is something that we can identify with. It's God's people having to patiently wait during a period where you're saying, God, what's the holdup? What happens next? And there's waiting. It's the question of, what are God's people to do as they faithfully wait on God, believing in his sovereign care for them? What are God's people to do in the waiting? What's trusting, again, in the waiting, that God is in control? It is stewarding the wait and saying, well, if I'm waiting, there must be a reason for me waiting, right? Guys, we as a church are in a period such as this. We're waiting for God's future for our church, and we've got two easels out there with building plans on it. We look at the finances and we say, there's a pretty big, vast canyon between these two realities, and you know what that leads to? Waiting. It leads to waiting. And you know, my point to you this morning, and what I want you to understand is we're talking about a vision, where we're headed next, is that we must steward our wait for the future that God has for our church. It reminds me of the parable of the talents. You may know that passage. I think it's in Matthew 25. This parable of the talents is that the master of this estate passes out talents, like money, to or things that are valuable, to three different servants, and he gives five, and then two, and then one. Five to one, two to one, and then one to one of those guys. And two of them go and make use of it, and they invest it, or they trade with it, and they do something valuable with it and say, I'm going to be a good steward of this thing that I've been given, and so I'm going to steward it because I want to honor my master. And then the third guy goes, and he takes his one talent, and he buries it in the dirt. Well, the master comes back and says, okay, what have you done with the weight? And the two guys say, we've done this with the weight. They have not been passive. They haven't sat on the cash. What have they done? They've waited with a biblical approach, active waiting. You've caused me to wait, and yet I've gone and done this with the weight. And then the one is the one that really the master comes down on and says, you fool. You were given something. At least you could have done something with that waiting period, but you squandered it. You lazily sat on it. And you did not wait as you should have waited. I'm paraphrasing. Guys, we are to steward the wait. To wait for the Lord is to actively, not passively, but actively serve him with dependence and trust. I want to read a few of those verses that I mentioned. There's over 40 of them in the Bible that talk about waiting on the Lord. This is Psalm 27:14. You'll see all of them on the screen behind me. Psalm 27:14. Wait for the Lord. Be strong. And let your heart take courage, wait for the Lord. Do you notice something about that verse? Well, there's the passive, wait. Seems like it's a passive statement, right? But what is it coupled with? Be strong, take courage, activity, right? There's activity there. Look at the next one. Psalm 37:34. Wait for the Lord and keep activity, active, passive, wait for the Lord, but keep his way, and he will exalt you to inherit the land. Psalm 62:5-8. For God alone, O my soul, wait in silence. Well, that sounds like passivity, right? But look what it says. For my hope is from him. He only is my rock and my salvation, my fortress. I shall not be shaken. On God rest my salvation and my glory, my mighty rock, my refuge is God. So he's waiting in him, but look what he says. Trust in him at all times. That's active, O people. Pour out your heart before him. What is that? Active. God is a refuge for us. What does it look like to wait biblically? It means to be trusting in God, but there is activity that goes along with it. Another one, Isaiah 40:31. But they who wait for the Lord, here's what they shall do. They will renew their strength. They shall mount up with wings like eagles. They shall run and not be weary. They shall walk and not faint. Why is that? Because there is activity that comes with the waiting for God's people. And notice that as God's people wait, especially that one in Isaiah 40, God enables us. He enables his people in the waiting. He provides, he empowers. This third chapter in Lamentations, this poem, it begins with several verses that sound so hopeless, and I'm not going to read them right now, but if you were to go and read all the verses leading up, 1 through 18, to what we began in verse 19, you would see that things sound absolutely hopeless for this author. Essentially, my paraphrase is, I got nothing left to lean on. Everything's falling apart. It feels like God is so distant. Where is he? And then he gets to verse 21. Look at it. Verse 21. He says, but this I call to mind. But this I call to mind. And therefore, I have hope. What does he call to mind? You notice the colon right there. Verse 22 then says, the steadfast love of the Lord never ceases. His mercies never come to an end. They are new every morning. Great is your faithfulness. It does seem like everything's falling apart. It does seem like the waiting is absolutely excruciating. And yet, this I have, that God is faithful. He's my portion. I will hope in him. That is who he is. And so the question then is, what must I do? Look at verses 25 and 26. The Lord is good to those who wait for him. Trusting God in a hard situation means waiting for him. He goes on and says to the soul who, now waiting sounds passive, right? What does it say next? It's active. Who seeks him. It is good that one should wait quietly for the salvation of the Lord. Waiting sounds passive, but at the same time, seeking. That phrase, wait quietly, it means to have a posture of continuous prayer and expectation. Notice expectation, prayer and expectation that he will keep being faithful as long as he is God. And that is always. He has always been faithful and he will continue to be faithful. And so we can pray with expectation while we wait and while we seek. Now listen, I'm about to get real specific about our future at our church. But before I get there, I would be so discouraged if I came to church and all we talked about was our corporate identity, okay? There are people in this room today that are waiting on the Lord. There is a principle here for you where you are, and I'm about to move on from this, but you, many of you, are turning to God and saying, God, what gives? Why the wait? I'm suffering. I'm struggling. I'm waiting. I'm hurting. If that is you this morning, and I know that there are so many of you that fall in that category, if you are waiting for God to answer prayer, to show his path, to reveal his plan, to guide your next step, to get you through a trial, to help you cope with immeasurable loss, I want you to understand something before we move on to our corporate, and that is this. Your wait is to be an active wait, not a passive one. And so if that's you right now, if you're in a hard place right now waiting on the Lord, I would encourage you to take what it says in that passage and apply it. In fact, the ones that I've already read, and apply it to your life. To seek actively while you wait. To wait quietly, actively in your waiting. To trust God actively while you wait. To pour out your heart actively while you wait. To keep his way actively as you wait. In other words, you may be waiting on the Lord to do something, to break through, to answer your prayer. And my encouragement to you is this, that you would trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not on your own understanding, but in all your ways to actively acknowledge him each and every day and several moments throughout the day and let him guide your path. Okay, today I want to talk about what we have talked about many times, and you've seen it on our financial reports. You've seen, you know, every business meeting we have, which we'll have one at the end of our time today, this Fellowship Forward Committee that we have assembled and that you have voted upon. You put these people together. They're thinking forward. They're thinking about our future. We've even used the subtitle for Fellowship Forward and called it Building Generations, because this is where we are. We see that God is bringing lots of young families and middle-aged families to our church. And so we are thinking about where God is taking us next. Fellowship, we, thinking Fellowship Forward, even intrinsic in the term, do you hear that it is a waiting enterprise? We're waiting, right? God is taking us somewhere, but just like you, maybe your kids or grandkids, are we there yet? Are we there yet? are we there yet? And you just get tired of saying it, don't you? No. Stop it. Again, quiet game. Next person to talk is getting a beating. No, we don't say that. We don't do that, right? We say, everyone be quiet. We were riding in the car the other day. We were going to the beach, and one of our children said, can we play with our tablets? You'll pass the time. I get it. You know, we didn't have anything like that when we were kids. And so they'll be fine, right? They'll be fine. And so he said, not yet. Not right now. Not right now. And then one of them asked again, can we play with our tablets? And I said, well, we gave him a time. This time you can. And they can see the clock. Doesn't matter. Can we play with our tablets? 12 minutes later, I looked at Brooke and I said, I can't believe it's only been 12 minutes since that question was asked. Because you know what that feels like, right? Are we there yet? Are we there yet? Are we there yet? And church, we're not there yet. We have these plans for what God is doing in us and for us and through us, but we're not there yet. But can I say something to you before we talk about the future? Can we talk about the past for a second? God has been so good to us. He's been so faithful. You know, oftentimes when Israel was looking for their future, you know what their prophets and their leaders would say? Look at the past. Don't you just remember the faithfulness of God? As you long for what's next, we just look back and remember that God has been faithful. He's been so merciful. He's been so good to us. I remember when I came to Fellowship. I came to Fellowship, great time. It was really popping off right in the middle of COVID, June 2020. Don't recommend, okay? Not the best time to get to know a couple hundred people, all right? I got to know everybody like this. So I really knew your eyes, right? I still remember seeing one of you on a Wednesday night after the mask had finally come off. And I remember thinking, that's what she looks like? She was beautiful. But I remember thinking, that's what she looks like? I won't say who that is. But I still remember that and thinking, what a strange time. But God has done so much since June 2020 when I got to Fellowship. I remember talking with, honestly, many of you when I first got here. But I remember distinctly a lot of conversations with you, Cain. We talked often, and one of the things that I remember talking with you about, and many of you shared this sentiment, was you would lament, and you'd say, man, Caleb, I wish you could have seen it before all this. I wish you could have seen it, participated, and understood all what we were before all this. And I assured you, and you assured me, man, that God is in control, and he's got it, right? And in his timing, I said, I believe that we'll be fine. Well, we'll get back there, right? This isn't going to last forever. And can I tell you something? God has exceeded what I thought that he would do. God has far exceeded what I thought at that moment when he and I would talk about that. You know, since then, we've baptized 63 people. 63 people. I don't know how many people there are in the room. Do we know how many people are in the room right now? 225. That's over a quarter of the number of people in this room. I mean, that's amazing, right? Since 2020, 63 people. By the way, if you think, well, it's 5 years, right? Well, it is 5 years, but 52 of those were since 2020. 2 years. 53 people in 2 years. And that's not the metric of everything. Don't get me wrong. That is not the metric of all the things. I'm just telling you, hasn't God been good? Hasn't he been faithful? I look around at what God has done, and I'm absolutely blown away by his kindness. Can I just say, there is a movement that is happening in this church family. And we talk about that. I want to talk about, there's a movement happening here. And many of you are here, by the way, because God has reached you to be here. You're part of that movement. Praise God for that. Not long ago, we had a town hall meeting out there in the dining area, led by our Fellowship Forward team. They laid out with much transparency, basically what we all have come to refer to as a good problem to have, right? And that's just that we got to make something happen. We are out of space. So much growth, so little room for more growth. And so the answer was, we need to build for our future. And that was really after we'd already talked a lot about what that looks like. And that's why you got those designs that are out there for you to look at and ask questions about. But the takeaway is that we believe that we have been obedient up until this point. But now it's time to wait, right? It's time to wait for what God can do next. And we look back and see amazing things, but God is still doing things, and it's time to wait. And this is why I felt led to talk about this today. Here's the issue, that waiting can be frustrating. Because, as I've already said, I think that we, even as adults, like to approach waiting like a child being told to wait their turn, instead of like a disciple being told to wait on the Lord and his timing. Because those are two different things. One of them is passive and it's excruciating and torturing. The other is expectant and it's obedient and it's active. I'm a big believer in transparency. And so in full transparency, I am your, if you're a church member here, I'm your lead pastor. I think about that adjective often. lead, because that is my calling. That's what I'm called to do here at Fellowship. And I'm constantly thinking about where God is taking us and what my role is in leading us there. I am your shepherd, but I'm really your under shepherd. Do you know who's the good shepherd? It's Jesus. And so my leadership ultimately is in submission to him. And so I have a lot of conversations both in my head, which those can be really dangerous and scary, by the way, but I have a lot of conversations in my head, but also between me and the Lord, between me and your staff here or your deacons here. Our deacons are wonderful, and perhaps we may even kind of dress down and we talk about some of these lead things on Wednesday nights in a more laid-back environment. But because I think this is important, because I think that this right here, what we're doing on a Sunday morning, because I think the very best purpose for the pulpit on Sunday morning is to preach the word, here's what happens. I don't often delve into our church climate or our vision for the future because, I don't know, I want to preach the word. And so today, I'm sort of going off of our beaten path. And while I think the Sunday morning are reserved for the preaching of the word, that's why I wanted to start with Lamentations, by the way, and ground what we're talking about in a principle and not just give you a spill. But I think that it's also really important that we understand, and I understand the value of transparency. And if I were you, I'd like to know where we are headed. So with the rest of our time this morning, that's exactly what we're going to talk about. I'm going to break it down in three ways. It's going to be where we've been, where we are, and it's going to be where we are going, where we're headed, where we've been, where we are, and where we are going. And I'll give you some stuff on the screen here in just a moment. But this is all about the principle from the Word of God, waiting faithfully, looking back, looking to the here and now, and then looking to where we are going. And as I said, this is a living room talk, and so we're going to have some church family discussions about this, and I'm so excited to do so. So let's first talk about the first thing, which is where we have been. Here's some of the things about where we have been as a church. Okay, you have permission now to look at the sheet of paper that you are receiving, okay? Take out that data. And I want to look at it together, okay? Could you put that slide up there with all the numbers? Because this is a summary of the sheet that you have, but I want you to have it. You can even go and take it home this afternoon and look over it. It's some good stuff, and I want you to be informed about all kinds of things, but I want you to also pay attention to the screen as I'm kind of drawing your attention to it as we go through this. So here's, in short, what we got. I want you to see our average attendance, and again, you'll see it on the screen up there as well. But our average attendance, you'll notice a trend each year over year, 2021, 2022, 2023, 2024, 2025. It's gone 155, 175, 228, 255, and approximately 262 this year. Do you notice the gap, by the way, between 2022 and 2023? That's when the party really got started around here. By the way, where are Tim and Christy? You guys are back there. Tim and Christy, I don't know what it is, but maybe it's just y'all, but like the day that you guys came, it was either December or January 2023, and you guys came, Miller and Josh came, and then Merrick and Dalton came, and you got, again, it's like a million of you guys, so maybe that's all it is. Maybe you just inflated our attendance. But no, that was a moment, genuine. I remember that family being here, and then I look around and I'm thinking, where are all these people coming from? That was a moment, and I don't just mean their family. I mean that was just, I identify it with you guys, and then I started to see so many different people showing up and thinking, this thing's starting to outrun me, y'all. I'm trying to remember your names, but it's getting to be a little bit of a challenge. But you'll see the trend there, okay? That we've essentially run out of room. We've continued to make adjustments to that. But notice that the difference between 2024 and 2025 is very small. I'm going to talk about that in a minute. It's because we don't have much room to see that number go up anymore. Notice the children number, the kids number. That number is taken from the number above. So in other words, it'd be of the 175, 33 were kids. Kids are identified as anyone from newborn up until second grade, newborn to second grade. So that number wasn't available in 2021 because we weren't calculating it. And then when we started to see a real influx, we were like, we really need to start tracking this number. And so we started to track that number in 2022. And you'll see again that trend going up. Now listen, you'll see an asterisk on 2024 and 2025. Here's the reason for that. Because in September 2024, we removed second graders from that tally because we changed children's church age from from age four to second grade to age four to first grade. So that number, we counted second graders starting in September of that year. Second graders were counted as adults, in other words. Probably the first time in human history that's ever happened, right? But that's just for our data keeping. In 2025, something similar happened. And by the way, notice the 10 growth from 2023 to 24, even despite losing that grade. Do you see it? Even despite lowering the qualification, the number increased. The next year, we took away first graders from that number as well. We added first graders into the adult group because Children's Church was changed in August of this year from age 4 through first grade to just age 4 through kindergarten. And with that, you see the data change. And again, I say, notice that even removing just an entire grade, that number doesn't really decrease very much at all, which means that it actually has grown. I want you to see a few pictures of our kids' ministry just from some of the stuff that we've done. Can you show those pictures? We'll just go through them one at a time. This is from Vacation Bible School. These are only, third through sixth graders, I think? This is when I was giving them a gospel presentation. At VBS, we do this, I think, on Wednesday of that week, I believe. We sat down, and this is not all the kids in the picture, by the way. The picture only could capture a certain width of them, I guess. And so that's a lot of kids at VBS here in the gospel. Go to the next one. This is our back-to-school party, and probably not safe, you know? No, we had a ton of adults watching. Everybody's watching their kids, and we wanted to make sure everybody was safe. But a big pool party for back-to-school bash, and I don't remember what our number was. It was 50 or 60 kids, I think. It was crazy. 55 kids there in August. A lot of kids were still on vacation, by the way, but that's what we had. Go to the next one. Just another photo. You can go to the next one. This was our fall festival this past Sunday evening, and I mean, this picture doesn't even come close to doing justice. I told you the number just a moment ago. We had somewhere between 375 and 400 people here on campus, and it was awesome. It was a lot of fun. Go to the next thing. Is that the video next? Oh, there's a picture from the playground, and again, doesn't even come close to doing justice, although Stone there in the right shirt on the right, red shirt on the right side, still angry about not being able to get that football through that hole, but that's okay. I'm still upset about it. We'll get through it, though. This doesn't even come close to doing justice. Again, there's kids spread out all over the campus, but I just wanted you to see it was popping off that night. We got the video next, right? This is from our Easter party. Look at them pouring out of there like ants. Watch. Keep watching. It's like a magician pulling a ribbon out of a hat, right? I don't remember how many kids we had there. Oh, that's good. But it's a lot, okay? And they just kept pouring out of that door. And again, it looked like when you step on an ant bed and then you're like, oh, shoot, here they come. That's what it looked like. And it's just amazing to see these kids are just pouring out of there. And that was at our East event. I just want you to see the influx. It's just amazing what God has done in our kids' ministry. I want to do something else. If you have been here 5 years or less, maybe since I've come, so 5 years or less, I've been here 5 years. 5 years or less, even if you're a guest today, if you don't mind, I would like you to. If you've been here 5 years or less, will you stand up? Kids too, will you stand up if you've been here for 5 years or less? I want you to see a visual. Stay standing for just a second. That's over half the room, okay? Y'all can be seated. I want you to see a visual. And by the way, it would probably be even more on a Wednesday night. The percentage would be even more. Is that not amazing? Can we thank God for that? Thank God for that. Absolutely. That's an amazing thing to look at. Put the data back up there. I want to talk about finances for just a second because I'm trying to draw a correlation here, okay? Notice the financial giving. This is to our general fund. So this is just general giving. This doesn't include the building or anything like that. But notice it's 417 to 518, 585, 687, which is a pretty dramatic increase. And then we're on pace this year, on pace for 780,000. Oh, by the way, I didn't say earlier. Oh, I should have said this. That number of 55, or really just 52. In May, we introduced the family worship days with the bags. On those days, there's no children's church, and so all of children's church are counted in the adult number. So that number of 52 is the average is way. It's hurt big time because the kids are not counted that day. 4-year-olds and kindergartners are not counted that day. I meant to say that earlier. All right, let's talk about some finances here for just a second. I want to just point out the correlation. By the way, our budget has increased not based on greeds, but based on needs. And so I want you to see that there's a correlation of attendance growth, and we'll call it revenue. I know it's a business term, but the giving has grown with the attendance. That's an important thing to see because the principle would be that if our attendance continues to grow, then we would also be able to have more overhead as we talk about building and stuff. It's just an important factor to remember. But I say that to say this. Again, looking at the 255 to the 262, we're out of room. All right, let's talk about where we've been. Continuing. Let's talk about staff development real quick. You can go back to the main slide that has the bullets there. Staff development. We've had some ministry staff development over the last 5 years, and really just more recently than that. Sam Riley, who's our student, who was our student pastor, is now our student and outreach pastor, extending him to from part-time to full-time. Becky has taken on a more administrative role with nursery, and so her responsibilities have increased dramatically. We brought on Brooke, which is a new position for our children's ministry coordinator, things that we've had to do to basically satisfy and sustain, maintain the growth. The other thing is parking. So we're parking cars in the cemetery. We're also encouraging you guys to park behind the playground. By the way, on Fall Festival, we parked over 60 cars back there, which is a really, really encouraging thing considering we're out of space. We can do that and park more cars back there, which was awesome. And even still, we have a solution coming for our parking. Our plan is to have a new parking lot back here in this big dip by summer of next year, hopefully. And so we'll see what that looks like, but that's the plan. Why does that matter? Because, again, we're out of room. We have guests that are coming and worshiping with us, maybe even today. I know it's raining outside, but we have guests that are coming, and they can't find a place to park. And here's what I want you to consider. If that's you, if you're a guest and you're coming to this church, I want you to pretend that that's you. You show up and you get in the parking lot, you can't find a place to park. Here's what it psychologically already does. It puts you on your heels to say there's not a place for me here. You see what I'm saying? And we haven't had one contact with that person. But automatically they show up and they're on their heels a little bit, like, I'm a little bit anxious about this because it's a little unnerving. Okay? So that's happening. And then let's talk about our seating, that we've had to be creative with our seating capacity, right? So there's this rule in churches called the 80% rule. When you reach 80% capacity, that's when it starts to feel a little uncomfortable. It applies to parking, it applies to classroom space, it applies to sanctuary. We have reached that way beyond that in parking. We've reached that in our sanctuary. And so the seating thing has constantly been something we've had to evaluate. Put that picture up there that I did the ChatGPT thing. So what I did was I said, put 300 chairs out, and this is 340. We just added 40 chairs here. But put 300 chairs up there and make it 80% full. Do you see how full that is? Now I want you to pretend that a family of 6, 5, 4 come in at 10:05, 5 minutes after the worship service starts. Where are they going to sit? Now if they were already on their heels because of parking, what are they when they walk in the door? Even more so. Real, a lot of anxiety. It's like, well, there's just no room for me here. And so here's the thing. Look, that's the case, but several of you have been so wonderful. I love our church family. You have given up your seat for guests at times, but even then, here's what then happens. The guest likely then feels like they've inconvenienced someone in being there. That is not sustainable. You follow me? That's not sustainable, which is why we're continuing to cram as many chairs in here as we can. We took out an aisle that was right here so that we could have more chairs in. We removed the stage chairs and put more. This one's really, really close to the splash zone right here, right? Really close to me. Even decreased just a couple of inches of leg room in order to put more chairs in. We added the overflow back there in the dining area. And many of you have been kind, maybe even right now, to sit out there. Several are right now. But number one, it's not the same. It's not the same. And number two, it should be an emergency overflow, not the weekly expectation for your worship experience. And yet many of you have been gracious and kind and generous with that, and I'm grateful for that. But the solution for now that we've come up with is 340 chairs on the floor, which is actually, by the way, compounded our greatest dilemma, which is what I want to talk about next, children's space. It's compounded it because we've made more room for people in this hour, but that doesn't change the critical space that we have over in our nursery and children's. And so let's first talk about our children's church changes that we've had. I kind of mentioned this earlier. Our personnel was overwhelmed. A few years ago, we had 4 children's church leaders. We had other helpers, but 4 leaders, and they were missing each on rotations. They were missing 3 months of church a year. Each of them were missing 3 months of this preaching a year. That is not acceptable. And so we've had to make changes so that people are able to be here and be in here. And so it is required asking people to step up to the plate. And by the way, I'm so grateful for those of you that have given so much of yourself. But we want a healthy culture of service. And that is, I don't want you to miss church. I want you to be here as much as we can make that to happen. And that requires more people stepping up to the plate. And so we had some overlap with, by the way, in addition to that, serving in the nursery, missing church more than desired. But there's a need there. We also have a huge number of kids. We talked about that a minute ago. They had up to 30 kids in children's church at one time. 30. On the playground, that's okay. But in that little building over there, ooh, boy, that's a lot of kids. That's a lot of kids. And so we've had to make some changes to sort of, you know, cope with that. Again, it was age 4 through 2nd grade, which is really difficult from a behavioral standpoint. It's also difficult because of the craft that they would do. You teach a 4-year-old differently than you teach an 8-year-old, right? And so that was just hard. So we've had some solutions. We went from 4 to 2nd grade to 4 to 1st grade and now 4 in kindergarten. And now that's manageable. We did it, right? But again, it's just putting a Band-Aid on until the next thing is difficult. We have family worship days. That was an effort to get 12 Sundays back in the year in order to draw back some. It's 3 months worth of volunteers. And by the way, that has been awesome. Thank you for being flexible with that. That's why we did the worship bags out there, because I know it's hard for kids to be in here sometimes, and we want to give them something that is occupying their attention. And so we did the worship bags, which were really because of the first and second graders that were going to have to be in here. But, you know, we got 35-year-old guys that are listening now, and that's great, you know. What about our nursery? Let's talk about nursery changes. Well, Pastor Chris had an office over there. That's now a nursery. Thanks, Chris. We had a counter's room, and he's got another office. A counter's room for our records, and we had to renovate that and turn that into a nursery. So we added 2 nursery rooms. We started with 2. Now we have 2 more. We've got 4. We've had personnel needs, though. You have to have volunteers in those rooms, and so the people have increased that have been needing to serve to fill that space. What do we need, 40 volunteers a month? 50? How many is it, Becky? How many, 40, 50? 50 volunteers a month to do that. You can see that that's a bit of a complication. And so here's what I got for you. We've been able, staff development, we got that figured out. Parking, we sort of got that figured out. At least we're getting there. Seating options, okay, we're good, at least for right now, until school starts again next year, or maybe even January, then we'll have issues again. And then nursery and children's space, not so much. Nursery, we ain't there yet. We got a big question mark there, and that leads me to where we are. That's the second thing. Where we are. Here's where we are. Needs that are being met, or needs that have been met, needs that are being met, and where we are hurting. Let's talk about what has been met so far. Seating has been met for now. What's being met is our parking. Where we're hurting is our nursery. We got, at full strength, about 40 kids. That's not including any guests that would show up. 40 kids back there on that hallway. I don't know if you've ever seen 40 kids at one time. It's a lot, okay? 40 kids is a whole lot. And so we talked about, do we have like an overflow nursery in case it's a high day? Do we relocate Chris's office again? I'm not kidding. That's actually something we've talked about. Do I lose my office? Which, what, all of those things are on the table in order to make it work. But while both were strongly considered, the personnel requirement would still be so vast, it would just increase our need for more volunteers. And so that's not really the best thing. And that's just where we are today. Imagine how much, I'll use it in quotes, worse. It's a great problem to have. But imagine how much worse it will get while we wait. Here's my point. We cannot be hurting in nursery for the next 5 to 7 years, or however long it takes to build. That won't work. We can't be hurting for that long. We can be flexible that long. We can adapt for that long, but we can't be hurting for that long. And so the ministry must thrive as much as it depends on us to steward the weight well, because God is in control, but we need to do our part to be faithful in the waiting. And so the question is this: how do we flexibly adapt, as we have been, to prevent ourselves from hurting while also being able to see the ministry continue to thrive? Well, here's your answer, and it's where we're headed, where we're going, where we are headed. Starting in January 4th of 2026, we're going to be moving to 2 services. I've already shown you the need for that and the reason for that. The most important reason is because I believe that God's leading us to that. And that's really, at the end of the day, the only reason that matters, right? If God is leading us to that, and I believe that he is, that is the most important reason. But I want you to see the data. That's why I gave it to you. But starting in January 4th, 2026, we're going to move to 2 services. The staff is behind this. The deacons are behind this. And so I want to get out in front of some of the questions that you may have about what that move looks like. And so you'll see some of that data behind me. First of all, the first service would be at 8 o'clock. Between there would be Sunday school, where we could come together and you still see your people, even if you go to different services, right? You come together and you're able to fellowship with your people during Sunday school, and then the second service is at 10:30. The next question that I oftentimes get about this is, and a lot of people, whenever churches do this, is, well, are the services different? Do you have a traditional service and a contemporary service? Absolutely not. Absolutely not. That is just asking to split your church. There's a reason why every single song doesn't scratch an itch for you on a Sunday morning. It's because it scratches an itch for somebody else. Like, there's unity in the body because we blend our worship service, okay? We're not going to split them. That would be so self-defeating. That would be foolishness. And so we're not going to do that here at Fellowship. We're going to have the same service, the same music, and the same preaching as much as I can help that, right? It's going to be the same thing, and I will do my very best to discipline my time so that we're everywhere we need to be on time, especially. So if you want to have a shorter sermon, come to the first service. After that, I'm taking the, you know, taking the gloves off, and we're just going to be here for a while. There's your incentive, right? You also notice that with that, we're going to have to add. We're going to have to add personnel and people and places. That's instrumentalists. We don't want to burn them out. And so that's one of the reasons why a few weeks ago you saw so many students up here leading worship with our praise team, because we're trying to now get more people in the rotation. If you are a capable instrumentalist, maybe an opportunity for you to have a conversation with this guy over here about what God may do to use you to free up somebody else. What about nursery? Both services? Yeah, it goes back to the whole conversation about unity thing. We need to offer that in both. What about children's church? Again, both. And if there's not a need for children's church, we'll have another question or a conversation about that. But for now, nursery in both, children's church in both. I think that's the smart thing to do. Well, the question then is, like, when are we going to see each other? Well, my homies go to the first service, and I can't get there. We go to the second service, and we're never going to see them. I hope so. I hope that you still see them in Sunday school. Maybe you come on a Wednesday night, and we have just one thing on a Wednesday night, and so you can come together. By the way, Fellowship has done two services in the past, and I don't think that this part went very well. But again, I would say to you that at that time, when it didn't go very well, Wednesday nights weren't what they are now, you know? They weren't then what they are now. And so I really believe that we're going to be okay on this front, that one of the most important things to any pastor should be, and to this pastor, is unity. And so as much as I can possibly do it, I'm going to do my very, very best to ensure that we are a church of one, even if we may worship at different times. And by the way, there's nothing stopping you from going to the second service sometimes, first service sometimes. You do whatever God leads you to do. But this pastor, as long as I can help it, I'm going to do my very best to ensure that we are not two churches, but we are one church. I encourage you to go to Sunday school. That's the place where you're going to be able to really fraternize and hang out with your people, fellowship. You also got small groups. You know, you got other events that we do as well. One of the questions is breakfast, and we're really not sure what that's going to look like yet, and so we'll keep you posted on what breakfast looks like. What about the parking lot? Well, the parking lot solution gets really easy at that point, because right away, without the parking lot even being built, you're going to see some out and in during the Sunday school hour that hopefully will alleviate some of the difficulty with that as people are leaving and coming in. Sunday school space is not an issue. The number, I think, of people in each service will level out, and if not, then we can have that conversation at another time. And all of that's subject to change, by the way, okay? All that's subject to change, and we're not tied to anything, including having two services in general. That's subject to change. Now, I want to be clear about something. I'm going a little bit long, and so I apologize for that, but I want to dial in here. This is where I really wanted to get, okay? This is going to be sacrificial for us, including me. It's going to be sacrificial for all of us. Let me be clear about something. No one wants to be in two services. No one wants to have two services. I don't want that, and I'm not dumb because I'm preaching more than once. I have no problem with that. I don't want us to not be able to worship together as one. No one wants this. Let me be clear about that. No one wants this. However, you and I have to approach this with investment principles. Here's what I mean by that. I don't like taking a monthly amount of money and putting it into my IRA account. I don't like doing that. But you know what's going to happen? One day, when I retire, I'm going to be really glad I did that. Because it's an investment principle. You know what I don't like doing? I don't like being the bad guy in parenting. I want to be my kids' friends. But a lot of the time, I don't need to be their friend. I need to be their parent. Because it's an investment principle of saying, I want to raise a child that loves the Lord and is a quality adult, which means right now, I got to say no. And I got to be the bad guy sometimes. That's an investment principle. It is temporarily sacrificing so that you can have a long-term payoff. Saving money for a big expense. You don't like saving money for the big expense, but you like to have the thing that you're saving up for. The common denominator with all those is that we have sacrificed for a time for the big payoff. What we're talking about, Lord willing, is temporary. This is a temporary thing. It's paying in, investing, so that we can reap the blessing later on. And what is the payoff? It's our future. It's our building generations. It's our fellowship forward. It's our construction that is to come. Expanding the sanctuary, all being back together again. And so what is the sacrifice? Let's go back to where we were at the very beginning. Here's the sacrifice: waiting on the Lord. That's the sacrifice. It's waiting. It's waiting on the Lord. And not doing so passively, but doing so actively. So what does the wait look like? And this is, if you've heard nothing I've said, please listen to this. Here's what waiting looks like. Do you pray for your church? Do you pray for your church? You must pray for your church. That is your stewardship. That is what you are waiting and doing. Are you praying for this? Are you praying for them? Are you praying for me? Am I praying for you? So much of our wait is praying. Are you a prayer for God's church? It's also giving. It is partly about finances. It is about being consistent in your giving, sacrificial in your giving, generous in your giving, cheerful in your giving. Are you stewarding the wait by giving to God's cause? Are you doing that? That's your wait. That's your activity. Are you doing that? Part of the stewardship is receiving. Are you receiving people when they come? Are you welcoming them? Say, I don't know them, but I'll say hey to them. Are you receiving them? Are you reaching out to other people? Are you going to work and saying, hey, there's something really exciting happening at our church family, and I just want to tell you about it? That's actually how most of our growth has come, by the way. It's not from pamphlets. It's not by canvassing. It's not by Facebook posts. It's not because people drive by on 495 all the time. That doesn't happen, right? It's because you are going to school and work in the neighborhood, to your homie's house, and you're saying, I got to tell you about what's happening in my church. That is how God is growing this church. Are you serving? Are you serving while you're waiting? Are you serving the church while you're waiting? Where are you serving in this church family? I'm coaching baseball, AU baseball, and, you know, we're just the best, right? No, it's 8U baseball, okay? It's hard, but I love doing that. And it's God's taught me things in coaching 8U baseball. And it is the fall. It's not as intense, but I love doing this. And here's the thing. We had a game that was rained out last week, and I'm used to rescheduling being really, really hard because I do this. Yeah, we got this meeting coming up. When can everybody meet? Oh, I got this. I got this. I got this. I got this. Okay, well, I guess we'll never see each other again, right? Scheduling things is difficult in church life. So we had to schedule this makeup baseball game. I get in the group meeting, and I said, okay, they're giving me Tuesday at 7 o'clock. It's just late, by the way, for an 8U baseball game. Tuesday at 7, it's actually 7:30, I think. Tuesday at 7:30, here's our makeup game. And you know what I got back? We'll be there, coach. We'll be there. My whole team was there, except for one kid because he was sick, not because they had something going on. Whole team was there. I told them that less than a week in advance. Whole team was there. Why do I say that? Because it discouraged me like crazy. Because that doesn't play second fiddle to anything in our culture. We love baseball. My kids love sports. But this is something I want them to love more. And when their parents don't love this more than everything, guys, we, and maybe you, don't live in that world. It was so discouraging to me because all I had to do was put the time out there and they were there. And that never, ever has happened in church. Ever. Ever. I was very discouraged by that. And here's why. Because you prioritize that which you value and that which you're invested in. It's a matter of value. It's a matter of investment. Do people value baseball here? Yeah. Are people invested in baseball? Yes. And so all that told me was, we are not valuing the church as we should. We are not invested in the church as we should. I'm not telling you to cancel your vacation. I'm not telling you. I'm just telling you, it's a lot easier to schedule a baseball game than putting somebody in the nursery. People make a priority of that which they value and that which they feel invested in. There's this rule called the 80-20 rule in churches, where 20% of the people do 80% of the work. It's just that's what everybody says. 20% of the people do 80% of the work. And while I don't think that that percentage quite lines up at fellowship, I think that the principle is kind of close. Are you going to break the trend with me? By the way, one of the things that's great about two services is you never have to miss church to serve. You serve in the nursery in the third hour, go to the first service. If you dread serving because you dread missing church, that's off the table when we go to two services. My hope is that doing two services makes you want to serve more, not less, because you don't have to miss church. And I think there's some allure to that, some draw to that. All right. Look, we got to be patient. It could take 5 years or even longer before we can begin our construction, but I love the visual that we had everybody stand. You were able to just look around and see what God has done in 5 years. And the reason, I think, in part, now we were faithful and we've worked well and served well. But here's the thing. Please listen. That happened because there was room for that to happen. There was room for that to happen. We had places for them to sit, places for them to park, places for them to put their children. Now, the question is, what could God do in the next 5 years? And will we step out in faith, giving and serving to make room for it? The answer for that question must be yes. It has to be. And so the two services thing is about making room for what God could do in the next 5 years. My question for you is, how can you be a part of that? Is your heart going to be bought into what God is doing here? And by the way, your heart buy-in is so much more valuable to me than your financial buy-in, because the other will come with the other. If your heart is bought in, everything else will follow. So here's what I want you to do. I want you to leave today and talk to your spouse, talk to your family, talk to the Lord, talk within your own relationship with the Lord. If it's just you, you're an individual, talk with the Lord about this. I want you to evaluate how often you will be able to serve now that you won't miss church. I want you to pray about how God will have you step into this new season. I want you to pray about what you're giving, how involved you are, how you're participating. I want you to pray and ask God about how God will have you take the next step into this season. And here's what I want us to do as a church. I want us to wait well. Steward the weight well. I'll finish with this. Stewarding the weight is a gospel principle because God was patient for you to believe. God waited for you to believe before taking you into eternity. Stewarding the weight is a gospel principle. God was patient even to send his son until the very right time because God purposes his waiting and he purposes our waiting. He has something for us to learn while we wait. And so I would ask for you to wait with me and ask him what he's going to do in the waiting.